Okay. So, no opening music out of, I suppose, respect, although she was certainly a musician. She was in Dream Girls. She did a lot of music before and after. But if you're here listening to this podcast, I just want to talk about Star Trek. And you clicked on this one, you know why we're here. It's been a bad week for Star Trek, for the actors, Paul Sorvino, David Warner. And then, of course, Nichelle Nichols. Not unexpected. She had been in declining health for years. There's reports of degrees of dementia, and she had these, I guess, this kind of convention she was putting together, but we didn't know if it was going to happen or not the last time through, and then COVID and all this sorts of stuff. So at 89 years young, Nichelle Nichols has passed away. But we don't do this with sorrow. We do this with excitement and with joy for everything that she brought to us. Every minute on screen, every moment that she contributed to the Star Trek legacy and to society, we celebrate. So, as I said, I'm Mike McCafferty. This is the podcast called We Just Want to Talk About Star Trek. I'm going to show you a few clips, some of my favorite clips of Nichelle Nichols. And then at the end, I'll share a little bit of my one time I had speaking with her. Just to share a little of that, because I'm not eloquent at this, but I'm rolling with this the best I can. So let's watch a couple of these clips here. Let's see what we have here. Five clips of Nichelle Nichols as Uhura. She played other roles, but let's just take a look at her Uhura. And let's see, is it this one? Let's start with this one first. This is the Balance of Terror, which has been echoed recently in Star Trek: Strange New Worlds. And this is such a small, and again, most of these things, most people are going to say, oh, well, she had the interracial kiss, and you know, she did this and she sang this song, you know, Beyond Antares and all this sort of stuff. But I found ones which to me struck me as a child and then stuck with me for the rest of my life. So I want to share some of these because they're a little bit off the beaten path. Some of them are like the last one's right on brand. So, but hopefully these are some that are a little bit just getting a little bit surprising, but at the same time also kind of encapsulate just five moments in her performance as Uhura. Now, she never had a first name, Nyota Uhura, as we call her now, but in her iteration, she never had a first name. Could speak Swahili. And I looked at that clip. I looked as a possible contender. I looked at the clip from The Man Trap, and that she's actually got some really good scenes there. She has a scene where she's talking with Spock about how he's never fallen in love, and shouldn't he tell her she looks pretty and you know, a little 60s cringy, but also a nice little moment that defines her and defines Spock. My runner-up moment was not that. It was actually when she was speaking Swahili to the salt vampire of all creatures, of all people. But just the mere fact that she was able to broaden her character's role, and this is Gene Roddenberry wanting to do this, by her speaking Swahili to another African American on camera in 1966. Amazing. Amazing. I did a little bit of deep digging on that today about what they're actually saying, and translation's a little wonky, so you know we'll kind of leave it at that. So in place of that, I want to bring up this little moment here. This is from The Balance of Terror, and this episode deals with bigotry and racism to a degree, alienism, I suppose, with Stiles here, like just giving the hard glance at Spock. There's a moment earlier, which is often cited, where Kirk turns Stiles around and he says, there'll be no bigotry on my bridge. And I wish the camera just frames Uhura's face out at that moment. She might have been busy doing something else. I wish we could have seen that. If I can, again, this is all just kind of shooting from the hip, but I thought about it for a minute and think about just for a half second, 1966. And you're an African American actress on television. Think about how he's looking at an alien, on this television show, and yet how alien must she have felt being on any set during the 1960s? And then how alien she must have felt being on a set where she is not being defined by her gender or her color. That is all things you may say about Gene Roddenberry, including the fact that they had a relationship. The fact that he unabashedly put her in that show without making her race or her gender an issue in that. Something that's like, oh, well, you know, but she's this, she's that. Now we'll see a couple of clips where we do have that a little bit of that flagged out there. But the fact that he put her there, not as a female communication officer, not as a Black communications officer, but as a communications officer of the Starship Enterprise, full stop. That I love. And I love this scene in Balance of Terror right here because they're in the midst of battle. Stiles has to take off and run the phasers because I guess in a crew of 400, nobody else can do it. And then he says, Uhura, jump out of communications, jump into navigation. Just watch this clip.
We've only the forward phaser room, Captain.
Fully operable, Scotty?
Yes, sir. But Specialist Tomlinson is manning it alone. No standby crew available.
Sir, my first assignment was in weapons control. Go. Lieutenant Uhura, take over navigation.
Yes, sir.
There it is. If you want to talk about the different levels of acceptance that you are going to see, and as the weeks and months and years go by, as they laud this human being, this actress, for everything she did for the progression of racial relations in this country, for acceptance via a character on science fiction. And there's going to be lots of different times and lots of different other moments. I submit to you, this is one of the strongest because she is being accepted. This officer, again, full stop, not only is amazing at communications, but also at navigation. And you know who knows that? Everybody, including Sulu. Look at that. She turns off her communication gear. She goes right over. She has a seat right next to Sulu. Sulu gives her a little look, the tiniest of smiles. Two people of color, as defined by 1960s America, in their job, doing their job, and nobody has a problem with that. It is one of my favorite moments there because it's just yes. It's just yes. Okay, good. And the normalization of that did so much in my mind, as a young child's mind, as a person who's grown through all this. If you're asking me lessons that I received from this show, that was one of them. All right, here's another one. This is going actually to the animated series. And take a look at this. It looks like a little fire there, doesn't it? Let's take a look at this. This is the Lorelei signal. This is kind of a goofy episode where all the women on this planet seduce the men and take them onto this planet. Gene Roddenberry always had this kind of this weird kind of fetish of being subjugated by women. There's another show he had called, I think it was Earth 2 or something like that, or something. The exact same plot. And so all the men are taken away. And so Uhura takes over.
Humanoid males, exposure causes increasing weakness, possibly to point of death.
Lieutenant Uhura to Security Officer Davison.
Davison here.
I want an all-woman security team on every transporter immediately. No one is to transport down to the planet unless it is on my order.
Aye, aye, Lieutenant.
What are you doing?
Taking command of this ship.
Damn straight. So I think this is the first instance we have of a woman in command of a starship. Now, if you go to Turnabout Intruder, you know, which is a terrible episode, it is the everyone kind of shrugs and averts their eyes that is the last episode of Star Trek of the original series. They have this line where no woman has ever like been in command of a starship or some stupid line like that. Just ridiculous. Like I think everyone who wrote that, everyone who did that now cringes. Everyone who's ever heard that cringes, and we all wish that didn't exist. And the animated series flipped that around because Uhura, boom, she's jumping straight into command. She is in command of the Enterprise. Good for you. The other thing I like about that, actually two things I like about that. One is that Nichelle Nichols is also voicing the voice of the security officer who also happens to be a woman. The casualness of the progressive movement of that, amazing. This scene here in this Lorelei signal, it's a goofy episode that all the guys get old. And in fact, this does not look like the cast right there. If you're looking at this, I'm also, you know, recording this for the Facebook page, but yeah, not a great episode, but a great moment for Nichelle. I love this scene. This is from The Naked Time. Again, another tiny little sequence that most people are probably going to say, what, huh? How, what, why? In The Naked Time, everyone gets the little water in their pores and they kind of get drunk. And Sulu gets drunk, takes off his shirt and thinks that he is one of the Three Musketeers, jumping all over the Enterprise. He makes his way to the bridge and starts flashing around his foil. And in a moment, he grabs Nichelle Nichols. Now, I think we talked about this before, but let's just listen to this one more time because I love this exchange.
Sulu.
Ah.
Sulu, give me that.
Sulu! I'll protect you, fair maiden.
Sorry, neither.
Oh, Sulu.
No, it's just... Hey, man, first a kid's got hairy armpits. Never saw that. It's a funny line that she handles with such aplomb. And again, in 1967, 66, you know, it's, I'll protect you, fair maiden. Sorry, neither. She is neither fair nor a maiden. She can take care of herself, damn it. And she pushes him away, and he is then, you know, rendered unconscious. It's just the subtlest of comedy, which I always enjoy. And she handled it so well. This one, this is the Savage Curtain from the original series. And this is a goofy episode. This has Abraham Lincoln showing up here. And Abraham Lincoln is getting a tour here with William Shatner, who's kind of looking a little thick in the midsection. There, he might have his corset on that right there. And as he's touring the entire Enterprise and goes on the bridge and he sees Uhura, who's, by the way, sporting a fabulous hairstyle right there, but much different than her normal kind of beehive weave. He you know, goes over to her and he kind of makes a claim on her, which is not, let's say it's not 21st century appropriate even now for me. So I think I've skipped over a little bit. And then he realizes instantly at seeing the reaction of his statement that, oh my goodness, was that a term of property? I don't understand. And here in third season, where everything is just kind of up for grabs, we have this wonderful little exchange about the power of words or the lack of power of words can have over people and the way that it's just not even an issue.
Oh, forgive me, my dear. I know that in my time, some use that term as a description of property.
But why should I object to that term, sir? You see, in our century, we've learned not to fear words.
May I present our communications officer, Lieutenant Uhura? The foolishness of my century had me apologizing where no offense was given.
We've each learned to be delighted with what we are.
I love that exchange. I love her complete being okay with that and just saying, why should I be afraid of words? It is such, it's something which stuck with me as a kid for the rest of my life. And just her ability to just say, it's okay. I know who I am. And as Kirk says, we're each delighted with who we are. Of course, then they fight rock monsters and they fight Colonel Mustard and all that kind of, all this weirdness in this episode. But for that one brief moment, we once again get reminded of how awesome Star Trek can be and how awesome Michelle was, who had to endure and always rise above it. Now, we've heard the story. She's told it many times before, as we see Lincoln here, and we talk about it, where Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King came up to her because she was thinking about quitting the show. And I think I read it. I had her autobiography. I think I read portions of it or all of it. I can't remember. Sometimes, you know, I read most of their autobiographies, the big seven. I've read most of their autobiographies. And a lot of times you got to skip over the stuff where they talk about their lives. Okay, yeah, I get it. You did that project. You did Green Berets. I got it. George Takei. Sure. But you want to read the Star Trek stuff. And it is the oft-repeated story, which I suppose I'm alluding into here, where she was considering leaving the show after the second season. I believe it was the second season, because she wasn't getting enough to do. And Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, pulled her aside and said, "You can't do that." It's one of his favorite shows. And the effect that she had on people of color at that time could not be diminished. It was so important. It was so powerful that it made her reconsider and stick on. Now, that doesn't mean that she got better roles in that. Now, of course, we had the infamous interracial kiss, you know, which if you dig into it, you know, there were many other times in television that actually occurred. But this was the first time between, you know, a white man and a black woman on network television. So, okay. Yeah, that's okay. And certainly that was one of my contenders, but we all know that everyone's going to be talking about that, you know, because it is so powerful. But it is in those other moments of Star Trek where she has to face these 1960s layers of gender discrimination and bigotry and racism that are endemic within the society. And she rose above it. It's in those smaller moments that I really appreciate her. And of course, I appreciate her in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. By and large, this is one of my favorite scenes. I think one of our favorite scenes for, you know, I mean, if you were give like, you know, top five scenes of Uhura, this has got to be number one for pretty much everybody. And it's a shame that we didn't get to see more of her in this movie. I don't know why they decided to dispatch her and not have her on the Enterprise for the rest of the movie. It seems like a weird choice, but it happened. But as a parting gift, she gets this amazing scene. Let's go here.
Roger, Old City Station at 2200 hours. All is well.
Understood. All stations clear.
You amaze me, Commander.
Oh, how is that?
A 20-year space veteran, yet you choose the worst duty station in town. I mean, look at this place. This is the hind end of space.
Peace and quiet appeals to me, Lieutenant.
Yeah, well, maybe that's okay for someone like you, whose career is winding down. But me, I need some challenge in my life, some adventure, maybe even just a surprise or two.
Well, you know what they say, Lieutenant. Be careful what you wish for. You may get it.
Good evening, Commander. Is everything ready?
Step into my parlor, gentlemen.
Admiral Kirk, my God.
Very good for you, Lieutenant.
But it's damn irregular. No destination orders, no encoded IDs.
All true.
Well, what are we gonna do about it?
I'm not gonna do anything about it. You're gonna sit in the closet.
The closet? What, have you lost all your sense of reality?
This isn't reality. This is fantasy. You wanted adventure? How's this? The old adrenaline going, huh? Good boy. Now get in the closet.
Okay.
Go on. Go on.
I'll just get in the closet. Okay.
I'm glad you're on our side.
Can you handle that?
I'll have Mr. Adventure eating out of my hand, sir. And I'll see all of you at the rendezvous. Oh, and Admiral. All my hopes.
Much great, such a great scene, funny, exciting. And one of the things I want to point out to you, and I'm realizing this as I'm watching it more and more, is that as we've moved from the 60s, where certainly the idea of a African-American woman being, you know, even on board a spaceship, on board a starship, in, you know, on equal footing with, you know, men and men, you know, Caucasian men. Here we have the 80s, where we're starting to address those issues, but we still have the gender disparity. A woman can't do this. A woman can't do that. Women are starting to enter the workplace. Remember Working Girl with Harrison Ford? We're starting to get into that. And we have movies with Ripley and Sarah Connor and these strong females. And I'm suddenly realizing for the very first time in watching this, Uhura is one of them too. I mean, if you want like the parallel, I mean, you've got James Horner's music backing her and backing Ripley around the same timeline. Getting that same sort of wonderful strings that like, you know, women can do anything that a man can do, and including putting the man in the closet. So I love this scene on so many different levels. And as I watch it, I realize that the pivot that occurred, the escalations from not only am I here, but I can be in charge and I can take over. I can do anything I want to. That working girl sort of mentality, which came about from the 80s, she is echoing it perfectly there. Those are my five scenes. Now I'll share with you just for a moment my own interactions with her back in the aughts. I think I've mentioned this before. Back in the aughts, I was, I don't know what the hell I was doing, but I was sort of like a stringer working for this. It's called Slice of Sci-Fi. They're still on. They're a podcast company. And I did a podcast for them. I was one of their guests. I said, hey, let me write a couple articles for you. Let me do this, this, and that. You don't have to pay me. I just want to, you know, kind of, you know, broaden my resume. And one of the things they said was like, hey, we've got this movie that Nichelle Nichols did called, I don't remember what it was. It's a terrible movie. It's an absolute terrible movie set in Las Vegas. And it's something Madam and her women or something like that. It's a brothel. And I don't know what it was about. It's terrible. It's just not a good film. And they said, but hey, there's a premiere of it going on in Santa Monica. Do you want to go like watch it? She's going to be there and you can talk to her afterwards. I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's go do that. So me and Jason McCarris, friend of the pod, went down to go see it. And it was terrible. It was so bad. And we were just laughing so hard all the way through because it just was written poorly. The production was poor. Now, Nichelle was great. She was great. And she sang for some reason. She had like three different numbers. She had her jazz pianist in there who was, you know, playing and singing for her. It didn't make any sense. But we did our best to hold in our laughter throughout the entire film. I think the director was right behind us, right in front of us. So we couldn't shake too much. I talked to him a little bit. I interviewed him a little bit. We had my camera. And then I saw her. And I walked over. I said, Nichelle, can I interview a little bit about this movie? She said, sure. And so for the next 20 minutes of my life, I got to talk to Lieutenant Uhura, to Commander Uhura, to Nichelle Nichols. And I got to talk to her about the film, which she was delighted to talk about. And I talked to her about it for a little while. And I talked to her about Star Trek. Yes, I brought up the first kiss between, you know, a Caucasian man and an African-American woman. And we talked about it for a minute. And there was a moment. And I know I've talked about this in the podcast before, but maybe it was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, but I'll recount it. And I sat there and I said, hey, maybe we should recreate it here. I think I did. I can't remember. We lost the audio. The audio was messed up. Maybe someday we'll be able to get it. I remember, I can't remember if I said maybe we should recreate it. Maybe I just thought about it. But I'm sitting there, and this—I think she must have been 75 at the time. She was beautiful, absolutely a beautiful one. And I was a married man with kids, I think. And was my son born? I'm not sure. But as I'm sitting there talking to her and staring at her, I had my own Lorelei signal to go back to her. You know that clip there. I was entranced by her. By her aura, by who she was so wonderful. And to this day, I regret not moving forward. I know my wife would have been fine with it. She's fine with it now. I mentioned it to her today, and she said, "Oh, you should have." I wish I could have at least given her a peck on the cheek. You know, we didn't have to recreate the whole thing. but just the act of being close to her. That sound weird? Sound creepy? I didn't do anything. I just had these thoughts. I was so enchanted by her. I was so mesmerized by her. I didn't act on it in any way. But I kind of wish I did. Because she was amazing. She was an amazing, amazing human being. And as I said on the Facebook, she made better communicators of us all. She allowed us to communicate to each other better. That's her impact. She opened lines of communication for people to begin to have discussions. I don't know if she solved racism or gender inequity. I don't know if she solved problems with Star Trek. I can guarantee you she didn't, because we still have some of those. But she opened up the conversation just by being there, just by being her and having that courage to be her, to be, as they said in the Savage Curtain, to be thrilled with who she was at the moment, to be happy, to be content. And so for that, I am grateful. And I am sad. I am sad that we have to say goodbye to yet another one of the Big Seven. I'm going to end this with one more clip here, because I think there's value to that here. Because this is actually from The Undiscovered Country. And we are saying goodbye to David Warner, too, who was an amazing actor in his own right. I knew him before he did all the Star Trek. I don't want to co-opt this, but I was going to do it on him anyways. But I knew him before in Tron, in Time Bandits, in Time After Time, Nicholas Meyer, Malcolm McDowell. So I knew him in all of that before he started showing up in Star Trek. And when he did, I was like, oh, I know that guy. I love that guy. And my friends, the Fools, friends of the pod, Jason, the Doctor, Matt Stompy Thompson, we love to have this toast. This is our toast we always have. Let's just play this here.
I offer a toast. The Undiscovered Country. The future.
I love that, how it's recontextualized as not being death, but the future. And for Nichelle, David, and Paul Servino, and all of those that have left us, who have moved on to that version of the Undiscovered Country, they have brokered an Undiscovered Country for us, a future for us, because of their work in this fictional science fiction show. So I tip my hat to them. I do also want to share this as well. I love this phrase by her. Admiral, all my hopes for the future. If I can put those two phrases together and say all my hopes for the future, they have made that a reality for us. So for Nichelle, David, for Paul, for everyone who's come and gone, but especially for Nichelle, I say thank you. I say thank you for having communication lines open, hailing frequencies open. And hopefully we answered. I don't know. Again, you know, I wish my communication was better. I wish I could end that any more dramatic. I think I had like five different endings on this, but in typical, I just want to talk about Star Trek fashion. It's going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride, a little bit of Star Trek Generations, Saucer Sepa crashing down there. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about some of the most influential people in my life who just so happen to have been on Star Trek.